Yeah, that was good. That was good. Let's clap for that one. Well, happy Father's Day. Welcome. Glad you guys are here. As you leave today, men, you can get a free Bloomin' Onion card for Outback Steakhouse, so you can go to Outback and get it. It's not good for just a Bloomin' Onion. It's good for any appetizer that's on the menu. And after you eat that appetizer, then you have to pay for this part, but you can get a steak as big as your face. And eat it. And nobody can say anything to you today because all you got to say is today's Father's Day. So you got an excuse to do whatever you want. You want to fall asleep watching NASCAR or U.S. Open, you just wake up, today's Father's Day. And it doesn't always work. I'll let you know that from personal experience. But go ahead and try it, no less. So, well, I'm glad you're here today, and I'm excited about this morning. I want you to know that a few months ago, I went to the doctor, and I had some blood work done. It was just a normal checkup. And it came back not so good. And in fact, they called me and said, Dr. Skinner wants to actually see you. And so we're looking at that. And what happened is I have very bad cholesterol, turns out. And what in particular, I have very bad triglycerides. And triglycerides, they're supposed to be below 100. Mine were 535. Yes, that's what my wife did when she saw it. She was surprised and shocked. And so Dr. Skinner said, here's what you need to do. You need to start taking some medicine and changing up your diet a little bit and this, that, and the other. And so I did. I started taking some medicine. I took the medicine he prescribed. I didn't really change my diet. I didn't exercise at all. I just sort of took the medicine. And he said, I want to see you again in 3 months. So I went for that checkup just a few weeks ago, and the blood work came back, and my triglycerides had changed to 545. So he looked at that and he said, well, this is not good. He said, we're going to have to really get after this thing, and we're really going to have to go after it. And so he put me on some more medicine, and he said, you really got to change your diet, and you got to start exercising. And I looked at him and I said, look, doc, if you can figure out a motivation for me that will help me be motivated to exercise, I'll be glad to do it. And he said, well, that's a good question. I appreciate it. He said, one motivation I can think of right off the top of my head is living. I said, that's a good one. I'll probably think about that one for a little bit. And because, my goal, I want to be able to walk Elise down the aisle. She's only 18 months one day. And just to be honest with you, Dr. Skinner's not real sure I'm going to be able to do that if I don't make some changes. So here's what I've done. I didn't do this. We went on vacation. Right after that, I said, doc, we're going on vacation. I can't do this yet. You don't change your diet right when you go on vacation. That's ludicrous and crazy. Only crazy people do that. Anyway, so we come back this past weekend, I told Shay, I said, I'm declaring war on triglycerides. I'm eradicating them. They're getting out of here. I'm declaring war on them. She said, that's awesome. That's great because I just signed up for a Whole30 diet. Do you want to do it with me? Well, I stepped in that one, didn't I? I said, well, what is it? So Whole30 is basically you can't eat fun stuff. You can't eat candy. You can't eat sugar. You can't drink sweet tea. You got to drink unsweet tea. You can't eat grains. You can't eat corn. You can't eat. There's a lot of things that you can't eat. Now, there are a lot of things you can eat. And here's the good news about it is what you can eat, you can eat as much of it as you want. But there are things that you can't eat. And I'm telling you, it's really hard to eat out. And I found that out this past week. I went to lunch with a friend of mine to an Asian place up in Memphis. And I told Shay, I said, I need you to look at the menu so you can tell me what I can eat and what I can't. And she called me back and she said, your best bet is probably the salmon salad and just get the salmon grilled and just get oil and vinegar as a dressing. I said, cool, that sounds good. I can eat that. So I get up to the cashier. I said, all right, here's what it's going to be. It's going to be a little odd. I said, first question, do you put a glaze on the salmon? He said, man, yeah, it's a teriyaki glaze. It is amazing. I said, I bet it is. Take it off. I don't want it. He said, you don't want the glaze? I said, no, I don't want the glaze. Just grill the salmon. Can you do that? Yeah, we could do that. So he grills the salmon. He said, now we have two dressings you can choose from. We have a ginger peanut and a teriyaki soy. Which one do you want? Or you can combine them. I said, I don't want any other one of those. I said, do you have like an oil and vinegar? He said, he looked at me like I had three heads. No, I told you we have ginger or teriyaki soy. I'm one of those customers that, when they walk away, they walk back and tell, like I told him we had two and he asked for a third and I don't know what's wrong with him. But anyway, I said, well, I don't want either one of those. What are my options? He said, those are it. I said, tell you what, don't put any dressing on it. How many of you have ever eaten a dry salad? It's tough, isn't it? So I sat there with my good friend. We talked back and forth. And while he was talking, I was choking down iceberg lettuce and a grilled piece of salmon. The salmon was actually pretty good, but the lettuce was not good. But the reason I did it is because I have declared war on triglycerides. I'm not going to let them get the best of me. And here's what I learned as I've kind of thought about this for the past few months and looked into it. My triglyceride count did not get high overnight. What happened is a big problem started from small moments. And that's how a lot of big problems start. Big problems happen because small moments accumulate over time. Like my triglyceride did not get that high because I ate a piece of chocolate cake the night before and then went to the doctor and got my blood drawn. What had happened is years and years and years of a bad diet and bad habits of not working out, not exercising, have led up to this point where now I got a big problem that I've got to address and I've got to attack and I got to go on the war mentality with it. And a lot of the problems that we find ourselves in life, they tend to happen the same way. You think about financial struggles. Typically, unless something catastrophic happens, we don't find ourselves in financial trouble overnight. What happens is a lot of bad decisions add up over time to where all of a sudden we find ourselves in a financial difficulty. Or you think about parenting troubles. When we're trying to parent our kids, let's say your kids are teenagers and you got 17, 18-year-olds, and man, it's just a struggle to communicate with them and to really connect with them. And what has happened is that the student didn't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to hate my parents. That's cool. No. Sometimes that happens, but most of the time what has happened is over time, small moments have led up to where there's a lot of tension in the relationship. Or even think about marital struggles. Nobody gets married and then on the honeymoon night and then wakes up the next day and says, man, I'm so looking forward to all the struggles we're going to have in life. It's going to be amazing. And they don't just wake up that morning and flip a switch and think, this is going to be tough. Unless, you know, your wife wore a lot of makeup on marriage day and now she doesn't have it. Anyway, that's where you can get in trouble. But typically, it's small moments over time that lead up to big problems because most of the big problems in our life come from small moments. Now, there's one other issue that the book of Proverbs talks about that is the same way. Over time, a lot of small moments add up into a big problem. And the book of Proverbs deals with this issue for three chapters, chapters 5, 6, and the chapter we're going to look at today in chapter 7. And three different chapters, it summarizes this issue, and it says it is a very big deal. This one issue has a lot of power in our lives. It has the power to bring life and the power to bring death. And I don't mean literal life and death. Like you will physically live through this. But what I do mean is that you will have if you tackle this issue, you will find the power of life to have a life that is happy, joyful, and can flourish. You will have relationships that will be more intimate, especially with your spouse. You will be able to be more intimate with them. It'll help you with your children. It'll help you with your coworkers. It'll help you in all kinds of situations. However, if you don't, if you fall into the trap of this one issue, it will also disrupt and cut into all of your relationships, especially your one with your spouse. And so it holds the power of life and death. And this issue is purity and how we need to tackle it. And what Solomon tells us in Proverbs is that when it comes to the issue of purity, we need to realize that we are in a war and not just a casual walk through life. And that's important, that you are in a war. Every single moment of every single day, you are in a war for purity. You are in a war to maintain this in your life because when you maintain purity, you're going to have intimacy in other places of your life. And understand that I am at war. So let me set the scene for us here. Solomon is the older man, and he's given instruction to his son, to his one son, and he wants him to understand that, look, there are some things in life that if you apply them, life will flourish. And if you don't stay vigilant in some areas of life, if you don't watch out in some areas of life, life can crumble in a moment and in a heartbeat. And one of those areas is the area of purity, in the area of staying connected to the Lord and to those that God puts in our life. So here's what happens. Starts in chapter 7, verse 6, Solomon paints this picture of how this is so important. Here's what Solomon says. For at the window of my house, I have looked out through my lattice. How many of you ever lived in a neighborhood where the many blinds moved a lot while people were outside? You ever see, like, they just peer? Shay and I have told you about the neighborhood we lived in Memphis. We were the new kids on the block, people who lived there for 20, 30 years. And whenever we were outside, many blinds would move. And they would also always be peering out. And now that I've lived in my neighborhood for about 10 years, Shay moves our mini blinds a lot. I'm joking. It's really me. I'm the one who moves the mini blinds a lot. Shay doesn't care that much. But that's essentially what's happening is Solomon just sort of happens to look by and he looks down the street and he sees a scene that is going on. And here's the scene. I have seen among the simple. I have perceived among the youths a young man lacking sense. Passing along the street near her corner. Who's her? He tells us in verse 5, the forbidden woman, the adulteress, the one who can bring us down when it comes to purity. He is taking the road to her house. And notice these words, in the twilight, in the evening, at the time of night and darkness. Now, when it comes to this idea of purity, and it comes to the idea that, look, you and I are in a war that we have got to stay vigilant in, Solomon gives us three areas that we need to stay vigilant in this war. And the first one is time. This is not on your outline. Feel free to write it down. But the first one is time. You need to stay vigilant in your time. And that's what originally gets this young man into a place where he's no longer safe because he's not staying vigilant. Think about soldiers. As you've perhaps maybe seen a war movie or watched a documentary, when you watch soldiers walk down a street, they're always vigilant. Now, they may be talking and cutting up and joking around, but their eyes are always looking out. They're always watching because they know they are in enemy territory. And at any moment, someone could jump out and get them, and then they'll be dead. If they don't stay vigilant, that's the moment that it could happen. And this is the same way. You might be sitting here this morning saying, man, I don't struggle with this at all, and this is not a big deal for me. The moment I begin to say, this is not a big deal for me, I got this, that's the moment it can jump out and get you. So we got to stay vigilant. And this young man, the first thing he does is he compromises himself in his time. Let me show you with a friend of mine, Corey, if you could come on out, kind of the picture of what Solomon sees here. Yeah, stand right there, buddy, if you don't mind. So, Corey is my friend. The microphone, I was going to ask a female volunteer, but that doesn't seem fair. But this is the adulteress. She's skinny. It's olive oil. But here's what the young man does. Let's say I'm the young man, and I want to go to my friend's Corey's house because, you know, we're going to go out. We're going to have a good time. We're going to go out to eat. We're going to go to the movie, see Guardians of the Galaxy, Wonder Woman, whatever. But here's what he does. He says, you know, I got a few extra minutes. I'm going to be early. Corey might not even be home yet. So what he does is instead of taking the road that goes directly to his house, he says, I'm going to venture this way. I just want to see if she's home. I'm strong enough. I can handle it. But I just want to see. Maybe even something's going on over there because always a lot of drama happens over there. And then I'll have a good story to tell with my friends while I'm out with him later. So I just want to head that way. I got a few minutes to kill. It's no big deal. Nothing's going to happen. And he heads this way. Just, quote unquote, just to see. Just to see. Not a big deal. Now, see, there's lots of other ways he could go. He could take the straight line. He could even go around this way. But instead, he's like, you know, I just want to see. I'm strong enough. I can handle it. You see, in the moment that he says, I'm strong enough, I can handle it, is the moment that he puts himself too close in the trap. I mean, you think about soldiers, they never do this. When they have to get from, let's say, point A right here to point B, my friend's house, my friend Corey's house, when they have to do that, they take the safest, most direct route they can. I've never seen a World War II documentary or movie where the soldiers say, hey, let's go over here and kick around the bushes a little bit, see if some Nazis come out. They don't do that because they're not looking for it. They know. They don't want to get in the middle of that because they know at any moment, any stray bullet can take them out. And so what they want to do is they want to stay on the safest route possible. Thanks, Corey. Appreciate it, man. Now, how does this work out in today? What does this look like for today? Let me kind of paint just a couple of examples. And these might not be yours, but maybe they'll help you think about applying this to your own life. Let's say this afternoon you're sitting at home and you want to watch the U.S. Open. And it's going to be maybe on Channel 5. I have no idea what channel it's going to be on. The golf tournament. But you've been watching ESPN. And that's on 206 if you have DirecTV. And so you know it's going to be on Channel 5. And you could just put Channel 5 in, but it's not going to be on for a few minutes. So you're just going to skim through the channels and see what else is on. And, oh, you might happen to run by the movie channels. And, oh, you just might happen to run by the adult channels as you make your way all the way around. You see, that's not a war mentality. You want to put on a war mentality. You just hit number 5, kick your recliner back, and go to sleep. Another way that it could happen, let's say you're on Facebook, and you've got female friends on Facebook, and one of your female friends, because she's excited about it, just happens to share, hey ladies, here's the newest in swimsuits for this summer. And you click on it. I just want to see. Just want to see what the quote unquote the styles are. Any guy who tells me that, I'm like, yeah, right. But you just sort of look. You got some time to kill. You're just flipping through Facebook. Maybe you're on break at work, at lunch break. You're just sitting at home. Nobody's home. In the bathroom, wherever. And you just click. See, you got to be in a war mentality. This is not a walk through life. When it comes to this stuff, you are behind enemy lines, and it is waiting to trip you up, and they are waiting to drag you in. Because look, once a hook gets in you, man, it's hard to get it out. You can, no doubt. I don't want you to feel defeated if this is you. I don't want you to feel defeated. You can get it out. But if it's not in you, don't let it get it. Be in a war mentality. Scroll on by, hit that post and say, I don't want to see this post any longer. You can do that on Facebook. So you're not constantly tempted by it. A second place that Solomon says, not only do we need to be vigilant is in our time, but also with our eyes. We got to also be vigilant and watch with our eyes. Notice verse 10. He says, and behold, the woman meets him dressed as a prostitute. She is dressed to be noticed and to be seen. Wily of heart, she is loud and wayward. Her feet do not stay at home. She's now in the street, now in the market, and at every corner, she lies in wait. She is looking for him, and she is looking to be seen by him. And so he's got to make a covenant, get in a war mentality with his eyes, and say, my eyes will not be the gateway that allows this hook into my life. You see, because if he doesn't make this covenant with his eyes, if he doesn't get into this war mentality with his eyes, it's like breaking what Paul says in Ephesians 4:27, don't give Satan a foothold in your life. Don't give him a foothold. Don't let him in at all. And by not making this covenant with his eyes, and not by not being in a war mentality with his eyes, it is like a foothold where that hook can be driven in. And man, it's hard to get out. Once it's in there, it can be, but it's hard. So let's not let it. Let's be preventative towards it. A couple of ways. Well, let me tell you this. If you don't know where this verse is, Job 31:1, you need to know. If you're writing notes, men, write this verse down, memorize it, whatever you got to do. This is what Job says in 31, chapter 1. He says, I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I, listen to him, he says, gaze at a virgin, or what he would say is a lustful, eligible woman. Gaze at her. Now, I want you to notice the difference. And here's what I want you to see. You can't always control what your eyes see. You can't do it. And ladies, this goes, I want you guys, this goes for you as well. Because I read a statistic and I read a story this week that in today's culture, women are sometimes just as susceptible as men are to this now. I read an article from a pastor's wife. She's not now, but young, in their young marriage, she found herself addicted to pornography as a teenager and then carried it into her marriage and hid it for years. So ladies, you need to be just as vigilant as men need to be. But whatever, however this happens, I'm going to put it from the perspective of a man. You can't always control what your eyes see. So let's say this summer, you're traveling, you're going to Florida, you're going to the beach, and you're sitting on the beach playing with your kids, doing all this, that, and the other, and an attractive, scantily clad young lady comes walking by, because they always do, because they want to be seen. And she comes walking by. You can't always control that you looked up in that moment and saw her. But here's what you can control. You can control what you do next. Do you gaze and follow? Do you linger? Or do you move on? You can't control what your eye, you can't always control every pop-up that comes on your computer screen, but you can control what you do with it. And you can make a covenant with your eyes that says, look, I will honor God first with my eyes. So therefore, I will not gaze, I will not linger. And then the third place that Solomon says, look, you got to be in a war mentality, not only with your time, not only with your eyes, but also with your ears. You got to be on a war mentality with your ears. Because notice what this woman does in Proverbs 7, verse 13. She seizes him and kisses him. She doesn't play hard to get. And with bold face, she says to him, I had to offer sacrifices, and today I have paid my vows. Basically, what she's saying there is, look, I went to the temple. I've got a lot of good food back at my house, and now we can go have a party because I am clean before the Lord. So now I have come out to meet you, to seek you eagerly, and I have found you. Notice how she speaks to him. Oh, it was you that I wanted. It was you that I came after. It was you that I sought. You are the one I've been looking for. You are the man of my dreams. It's flattery. She flatters him. I have spread my couch with coverings, colored linens from Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love till morning. Let us delight ourselves with love, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He took a bag of money with him. At full moon, he will come home. Basically, she says, my husband's on a business trip, so you want to come over? Because you are the one I really want. And she flatters him and continues to flatter him. And so you gotta be at war for your ears and the things that come into your ears. And it goes for the same, just like it did for the eyes. I can't always control everything I hear, everything that someone says to me, but I can control what I do with them. So kind of the way this can then play out in today's culture is this. If I ever find myself, and this goes for men and women, if I ever find myself desiring to hear the flattery of someone besides my spouse or more than my spouse, I have let my guard down. I'm no longer in a war. So let's say you're sitting at work, sitting on break, lunch break, and there's four or five of you sitting around. You're just talking about the project, the big project that you just completed and you just finished. And a female coworker across the way just looks at you and says, man, you are so wonderful and so nice. It's just so great to have you on our team. Now, those sound like innocent words, except for the fact that right before you left, you had a huge fight with your wife. And now those words sound like gold. And all of a sudden, you begin to think, what if she was my wife? I bet she wouldn't talk to me like my wife does. And your guard can come down. So you got to stay at war all the time. I mean, I'm telling you, this can happen in a moment. The most innocent of moments can blow up in our faces. When you think about war and you think about the soldiers being in a war mentality, I haven't seen it and I've watched videos, but I've read stories in the war of Vietnam. Some of you unfortunately experienced that. But in the war in Vietnam, soldiers would walk into a village. And the villagers, they wouldn't send an adult, they wouldn't send another soldier, but they would send a child out. And the soldiers would look at that child and they would laugh with them and play with them. and they would bring them into the ranks. All the while, the child has C4 strapped around them. And the soldiers have no idea until the child gets right in the middle of them and blows himself up. Because it seemed innocent, but yet it was just waiting for the moment. But this is why we got to stay in a war mentality, because these little moments of life, they can seem innocent, but they accumulate over time, and all of a sudden we've got a huge problem. So what we can do is we can go to war and keep a war mentality and keep a preventative war mentality on the forefront. How do you do that? Let me give you a couple of things that Solomon says. First, and when it comes to I need a war mentality, the first thing you need to do is internalize wisdom until it changes my desires. Get it into your life. And here's what I'm saying is have a plan before you go into the battle. Know what you're going to do when the situation arises. No soldier worth his salt just runs into the battle. They have a plan. They know what they're going to do. They know that you're going to go point and I'm going to run flank and I'm going to come around and we're going to meet in the middle. They always have a plan of attack of how they're going to make it through the battle. When it comes to our purity, we've got to have a plan. We got to know, what am I going to do with my phone? How am I going to handle my phone? Maybe I need to get a flip phone. How am I going to handle my computer screen? Parents, if you have a student that has a computer in their room, teach them to be at war. I would recommend getting it out of their room, but you can do what you like. You're the parent. But if it's in there, teach them to be at war with this. Because look, it is a doorway that people are trying to get into. Internalize wisdom. And I tell you, when you do, it'll begin to change your judgment. You'll begin to see that, man, the more I do this and the more I make a covenant with my eyes, with my time, and with my ears, the more I'm able to fight the battles effectively. And then the second thing Solomon says to do is we need to love wisdom above everything else. And wisdom in the book of Solomon is personified as Jesus himself. And what Solomon is saying, although he didn't know he was saying it, we've learned now this side of the cross, is that Solomon is saying, look, you've got to have a vision for life where you love Jesus above everything else. How do you do that? Let me give you a story to kind of show you how. This past Monday, I was playing outside with Evangeline, my 5-year-old daughter. And she had a big stick full of just dead leaves. They were dead, crusty, ugly leaves that she had picked up out of the yard, and she was playing with them, waving them around in the air. And it came time for her to come inside, and I went out. I was outside with her, and I said, okay, Evangeline, it's time for us to go in. Why don't you throw those leaves down? She said, no, these are my leaves. And she held them up close to her chest, and I said, Evangeline, those leaves are just garbage. Just throw them on the ground. And she said, no, they're my leaves. I have learned as a father, there are some battles you don't fight. And this was one of them. So I said, okay, take them in. And she took those leaves inside. She went and found Shay and she held them up. She said, look, mommy, look at my leaves. And Shay looked at me and I said, they're valuable to her. They look like nothing to me. Now, you want to know why you should love Jesus above everything else and why I do? Because I was that leaf. I was that leaf that others had said, just throw them away. They're no good. They got a hook so deep in them that they'll never get it out. They're worthless. And Jesus came along and said, no, no, no. You're mine. And I don't care how dry you feel, how bad you feel, how guilty you feel, how shameful you may feel, Jesus draws you in. He says, no, 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 no. You're not discardable. You're not throwaway junk. You're not just a dried up leaf. You are mine. And I have loved you and I have died for you. And when the power and the beauty and the joy that you get from that grips your heart, nothing else will grab you. Come what may on the computer screen, come what may down the beach, nothing will be as wonderful as knowing Jesus Christ. Because he doesn't throw you away, he pulls you in. wherever you find yourself. And so this morning, if you're struggling with this and you're like, man, I want to do that, but it's just so difficult. What I want to ask you to do is just to let go and say, Jesus, I want to love you more. That's where it starts. It doesn't start with going home and trying harder. It starts by saying, Jesus, I want to love you more. And I want to know your love for me more. And in that, you find the power to make a covenant with your time, with your eyes, and with your ears. Let me pray for you, and then we're going to move into a time of response. Father, we love you. And God, this is hard for us. This is really hard for us. God, there's so many things that pass by our eyes and our ears every single day, God, that want to grab us. So God, I pray that you would keep our minds and our hearts on Jesus, that you would constantly remind us that even though we feel like we're throwaway, that he says, no, you're not, you're mine. So God, I know you love us. And God, I know you love our church and those that are in this room. But God, in these few moments, let them feel your love. Let them know your love. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.